Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use. Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler, the host. We are recording on Saturday, the 19th of November. Victor Davis Hanson is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor hangs his hat on the web at victorhanson.com. And we will talk about why you should be subscribing to that later in this podcast. Lots of political things to discuss on today's episode. Donald Trump announces for the presidency in 2024. And before you can say Jackie Robinson, Merrick Garland has announced a special prosecutor to look into Donald Trump. And we're going to talk about that first on this episode, right after these important messages.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, pretty simple. Donald Trump announces, as he was expected to. The only expectation was he didn't announce before the midterm elections. He held off till after. What did you think of his announcement and or the reaction to the announcement, particularly the political reaction to his announcement from Merrick Garland, the thing which the Biden White House said they knew nothing. They did not know that was coming. Victor, big ball there to.
Yeah, well, he gave a speech, and I think he was told, or he himself decided, that about five things had to be in it. One, he would not be loud, accusatory, tone-wise. Two, he would not mention the so-called stolen election. Three, he would tell people to go out and vote for Herschel Walker. Four, he would dispassionately or passionately, but systematically do it in four things. One, review the Biden dismal record. Two, remind everybody that what Biden inherited that was working. Three, tell everybody what he was going to do if he were to be reelected. And four, just comment on what the hell happened in the United States, sort of emotional stuff. And he did all that. But it was over an hour, and he's in a matrix that he's created, or a paradox, I should say, that fiery Donald Trump is what gets people out to rallies. But this was sort of, I don't know, sluggish, inert. But part of that getting people out of rallies is he's completely wild and undisciplined. He can say anything, anytime, anywhere, about anything. And when he doesn't do that and he's quiet, he's not the Trump. And so it'll be very interesting to see that he did. I mean, even people like Lindsey Graham or the Wall Street Journal, they all like that. So now the question is, we've got Ron DeSantis as the favorite of the Never Trump people. I don't mean that as Never Never Trump, but the people within the party who have voted for Trump, but now would prefer DeSantis. And we've got Trump and supposedly Pompeo and Haley and Scott and Pence are then jumping and maybe some more. And the question will be, can Donald Trump restrain himself and not respond to provocation as he always has in the past? Specifically, will he not say that Glenn Youngkin has a Chinese name or Chow or whatever, or Mitch McConnell's wife or dissent and sanctimonious, that type of stuff? Because he's got the critique of Biden down, he's got the solution down, he's got the record down, but now people feel that there's choices other than Trump, unlike the 2016 candidates like Jeb or others that would not close the border, or they didn't believe in cracking down on China, or they weren't interested in just going full bore on energy. So his MAGA agenda is institutionalism, not going back to Romneyism and McCainism. The Never Trumpers, the Never Never Trumpers, are never coming back. But we're going to have a primary, and we're going to see if Trump can be disciplined, and we're going to see if DeSantis is Ronald Reagan or Scott Walker. And that's where we are. And may the best person win. I believe in primaries. I believe that people decide. I got very angry during the primaries when people said Trump shouldn't have picked that candidate. He shouldn't have picked Blake Master. What do you mean? He didn't pick Blake Master. He didn't say, you're going to run or out. Blake Masters ran. He endorsed him. That's a free country. And he can win or lose. And if you think Blake Masters is a good candidate, they voted for him. If God is a bad one, he didn't. And that's the way it goes. And the candidate is what people vote for. They voted for J.D. Pence, and they didn't advance, and they didn't vote for Masters. But it's a free country. So bring the primaries on. I think this is all healthy. But one last thing, Jack, you asked why the announcement timing. Well, it's the same thing with this slovenly character, Sam Bankman-Fried. Everybody knew from the SEC to the DOJ to the DNC that got over 60 million this cycle that this guy was a total fraud. He was a Ponzi scheme. He may make Bernie Madoff look like small potato. I mean, it's a $40 billion meltdown and actual real money, and it might have been 11 or 12 billion. It's not accounted for. Destroyed a million people's investments, probably destroyed lives as well. And, we'll talk about him in a bit, but my point is they knew that before the midterm, and they deliberately delayed in cahoots with the media. The media did not break that story, and they knew about it, just like they knew Merrick Garland was going to have a special prosecutor. And the special prosecutor, just to continue that very quickly.
Yeah, talk about that, please.
That brings up a lot of questions, because the first is the what about him and the quality under the law. So there's two aspects of that. If you're going to say that Donald Trump needs a special prosecutor, and we're told he does for two reasons. One, the Mar-a-Lago raid. But while he was crafting that, we learned from leaks from the FBI or maybe even the DOJ that there was nothing in the Mar-a-Lago raid. That there were not, quote-unquote, nuclear secrets, no bombshells. There were not things that, as the left said, he wants to peddle and make money. They were just mementos, like every president. And every president has a little bit of beef where the line stops between this guy gave me this as a personal gift, not as a president of the United States. So he brought letters and stuff. that's not going to find anything. So the other half of it was he was inciting insurrection. And there's two problems there. One, he has been washed, spun, dried by the January 6th committee. All the bombshells have come out. And there's nothing there that shows that the President of the United States organized or planned or encouraged an insurrection. If he disagrees with the vote total and he wants things to be done, then he's doing what Hillary Clinton did. And she said, this president is not legitimate. Joe Biden, if you lose the popular vote, I do not want you to concede. Resist. I'm part of the resistance. That's what she said. Then Stacey Abrams toured the country for 2 years saying this was illegitimate. This right. vote was fraudulent. I am the real governor. So people in and out of office do that all the time.
Yeah, and if I may, Victor, as we know, several members of that committee themselves, Raskin and others in the past, had also been election deniers.
Raskin, I think, wrote a book about Dick Cheney cheated in the election. And I think Benny, what's his name? Johnson? Or
Benny the chairman?
Yeah, he was a 2004 election denier. He voted not to accept the results from Ohio and said that the computers, along with 30-something other Democratic candidates. So I don't think they're going to find anything. So what will be the result of it? Well, there's going to be a couple of results. One, people are going to get so sick of this, the Mar-a-Lago raid, the Mueller investigation, the two impeachments, the impeachment after he left, the Alpha Bank hoax, the Hunter laptop hoax. So they're either going to, they may have empathy for Trump, or maybe, you know, he's Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner. He's Roadrunner and they're Wile E. Coyote. Or they're going to shoot themselves in the foot because some of the polls are starting to show that DeSantis and a one-on-one with Biden would run better than Trump. That's so preliminary, it's meaningless. But my point is, they are so fixated on Donald Trump and they hate him so much. And this obsession is so destructive to him that they may do what a lot of the Republican establishment want done, but they don't know how to do it. In other words, make Donald Trump a non-viable candidate to open the way for another candidate.
Don't you think, Victor, that he also, an immediate visceral reaction from any number of people, not necessarily, you know, political junkies could be, what, another prosecutor? This seems like, I don't like Trump, but they're clearly have a vendetta going after him, our government, you know? So there's a sympathy creation there, I think.
There is. That's what I said. It could really help Trump. And more importantly, these people are so self-absorbed, narcissistic. They don't understand that there's going to come a day, once upon a time, that there will be a Democratic loss of the Senate and a Democratic loss of the House and a Democratic loss of the presidency. And they have set up precedents. And what are those precedents? Tear up the State of the Union and put it in the face of the president if you don't like him. Tell those squad members, tell anybody that you, the House Minority Leader, that they can't appoint anybody, that I'm not going to approve them as Speaker. So you know what? No squad members. Or maybe they're going to say, you know what? We don't like impeaching a president in his first term, and especially twice. But the next time we control the House and we lose a president, we're going to impeach a president twice. And maybe that will be as soon as this next January. Who knows? And maybe, just maybe, when a president leaves office, he will be impeached. And maybe, just maybe, we'll raid his house. So they are set, and we're not even getting into pack the court, get rid of the filibuster. So they are doing things of short-term apparent utility to them that have long-term damages to this, to the nation, and maybe will boomerang back on them.
Right.
They better be very careful what they're doing.
And not to be macabre, but it could happen sooner than later. I mean, if Herschel Walker wins his special election, and it's a 50-50 tied Senate, many a close Senate majority has been affected by the death of a member. What if there's a Democrat senator from a state that has a Republican governor and who appoints her? So things could happen.
Or Biden could get so bad that Joe Manchin thinks that he's going down the tubes when he's running for Senate next cycle. And he might flip. And Herschel Walker can win because those 70,000 Libertarian votes, when that guy pulled out, he didn't really pull out early enough because of the mail-in balloting. He could get 40 or 50,000 more of those votes. And if Kemp really wants to, and I think he probably will, he can unleash that huge machine he has of get out the vote money throughout the entire government of the state of Georgia and help Walker. And Donald Trump, if he was smart, would not go down there and get on a stage with Walker, but he would say, he said that during his acceptance speech, but he would say, I want Herschel Walker to win, and I'm writing him a check for $10 million out of my PAC. And if he did that, and he would get that entire base that was not there in 2020-21 in the special election, I think he'd win.
Yeah.
I think you're right that it would put a lot of pressure back on the Democrats.
Well, Victor, do you have any thoughts about Merrick Garland himself? I know you do, but for his posturing in this last week, calling for the special prosecutor of Donald Trump.
The whole thing is such a lie. I mean, this all came out of the White House. Joe Biden was on record whining. You know.
No, it didn't. Didn't you hear the White House?
It was murder in the cathedral. Will not somebody get rid of this man? And what he meant was it.
Yeah, rid me of this troublesome priest. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Right. And we know that he was trashing Garland and saying that he was more of a judge, had a judicial rather than prosecutorial mindset. So Merrick Garland has been a broken man. He's been a broken man since Mitch McConnell broke him. And he is scared of his own shadow, and he does whatever the Biden White House. He has the same relation as Eric Holder did with Obama. He's their Biden's wingman. He's not an independent attorney general. And so he did this, and he timed it not to hurt the Democratic candidates. We know that. And the only thing that's kind of troubling about this, if you look at John Durham, this is the first time in my memory we have two now special counsel. But Durham was very different. He didn't leak whatsoever. There was no leaks. You didn't know he was going to indict Sussman. You didn't know about Tishinko. You didn't know any of that. Even Eric Kleinsman. You didn't know any of it. And he was completely smothered and cut out of news coverage. The New York Times, the Washington Post didn't say a word. And he had to deal with a Northern Virginia or interior D.C. jury, which is impossible to get a 12-person left-wing jury to convict a left-wing figure. But this special prosecutor, they're going to leak like crazy, just like the Mueller investigation and the New York Times and the Washington Post and the L.A. Times and the NPR. They're going to run with every whistle. Walls are closing in, the latest bombshell leak. And they're going to pick a jury in Washington that is hardcore left. And so I think that they will indict Donald Trump. They really do. And if they do indict him, he can be convicted if the jury is in Northern Virginia or in Washington, D.C., or he's just cut with 1,000 little nicks as he was with the Mueller investigation.
Right.
And it's really scary because we are really back to Argentina and Brazil type politics. When you go out of office, then you're a big target because they will weaponize the FBI. And by the way, we're talking about the FBI. When you saw Christopher Wray on that testimony, when he said he could not talk about the informants in January 6 because he had a meeting to make. That was a few weeks ago. And he had a plane ready. Well, what he didn't tell them is he had a private American government plane that he uses for business, but he was using for his personal taxi service to the Ariane docks because he didn't want to talk to Grassley. What's the difference between that and Steve Bannon saying, I'm a private citizen and I'm not going to go to the January 6th committee?
He was, yeah, Victor, I think he said, first of all, I have to try. He didn't say it's the law, but as the FBI director, I have to take the private plane no matter where I go. And yes, it was on vacation, but it was prearranged that I only had to speak so long. And wow, it's so Jesuitical.
Yeah,
so,
I know. He's been, if you put this in context, look at the last four directors. We had Robert Mueller, who just didn't know where he was. He was Biden-esque in his non compos mentis state, doddering. He turned it over to this cell at Andrew Weissman. That special group of people in cahoots with the FBI, they lost phone records. Cell phone data was erased. They had to get rid of Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. They staggered their firing so nobody would know about their text exchange. They were all biased. The Dream Team, the All-Stars, the Hunter Killer Team, as all of the Washington Post columnists giddily boasted about. Okay. Then he went before Devin Nunes' committee and he said, I don't know what the SEAL dossier, I've never heard of it. GPS, Fusion, Flynn Simpson, no, I don't know anything about it. Those were the two, as I've said a number of times, those were the two catalysts that started the whole thing. So he was lying on the road. Then we get James Comey, who came in. James Comey went to the committee 245 times, we're told, said, I don't remember, I don't recall, I don't know. Nobody can do that to a federal investigator. He lied. He lied when he said to the President of the United States, you are not under investigation. He was under active investigation. Then he took FBI devices on FBI time and what he called memorialized a private confidential conversation with the President of the United States. And then he leaked it to a third party who leaked it to the New York Times. Think about that. And then we come to his successor, and that was Andrew McKay. He lied by his own admission four times under oath to federal investigators who were investigating who was responsible for these leaks. He had no consequences at all. And I'm not a person who doesn't like A.G. Barr, but my God, when Barr let him go and said there would be no purpose in prosecuting him, he set an example. And he said if the highest law enforcement officer of the federal government, the head of the FBI, the director, can lie not once, not twice, not three times, not four times, but four times under oath, and the Attorney General of the United States will do nothing, then what credibility does he have? And he let him off. And then we come to Christopher Wray. And what is Christopher Wray going to be known for? For the performance art raid on Mar-a-Lago, to putting Peter Navarro in handcuffs on his legs, to ambushing people at the airport and taking their cell phone, and John Eastman, to that anti-abortion activist. They raided his home and terrified his wife and took him away in chains. And James O'Keefe, they came in the mid wee hours of the night, marched him out of his underwear. Did they ever indict him for anything? Why? Because they had turned into a personal retrieval service for the Biden family to find what? Right. When Hunter lies on his application for a gun and he throws it into a dumpster, as his wife does, and they want to find the gun, call in the FBI or the Secret Service. Ashley Biden has a revealing diary where she confesses on one page that she was a little bit too mature to be taking a shower with her father. Mm. And it's lost, not stolen, but given that she's a Biden, and given that she's related to Hunter, she just left it in an apartment.
In a hotel. Didn't she like stick it under a mattress or something?
And the next, I think it was an extended,
Airbnb
or something, and the next occupant found it and said, and so she didn't nobody stole it, and so that's what this FBI has become. And so they don't have any credibility. So if they are going to be the investigatory agency that is going to try to do what, tell us what Donald Trump did wrong on January 6th, when we know now that there was a number of FBI informants, and Christopher Wray won't tell us how many, but it's already leaked out that there were many in the Proud Boys, 6, 7, 8. We had Michael Rosenberg, the New York Times supposed expert investigatory reporter on January 6th. He got caught in a hot mic with James O'Keefe when he said, it was a joke. Everybody was psychodrama. They were just, I'm afraid. It was just a carnival atmosphere of a bunch of buffoons. There were my, I walked out. I saw all the FBI informants I knew. Remember that? And so I think the FBI is inert, extinct. It has no public support. It's infiltrated the kidnapping quote unquote plot with the Michigan governor. That was pretty much half the people were acquitted, and we don't know what will happen to the other one. But they're doing things, and we're not even getting into the Virginia school board or going into LA safety deposit boxes and rifling through them. They're just out of control, and they're weaponized. And I don't see that ever happening until the next president fires not just the director, Christopher Wray, but the entire hierarchy. Because you look
right.
And you know where they go?
MSNBC.
Or Facebook or Twitter. Isn't James Baker?
Well, they become head of security for some massive corporation.
Yeah, and mostly the people they worked with while they were in the FBI, i.e.
Right.
Silicon Valley to suppress the news and
right.
speak.
They will all cash in. They always do. Hey, Victor, there's another... Well, we brought up already the Hunter Biden investigation, but let's get your thoughts on that right after these important messages.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler here in Connecticut. Chilly, cold, freezing temperature, blue sky. Thanksgiving is on its way. Victor, hope everything's coolio out there in California, although I heard on your recording with Sammy, most recent podcast, that expected rains didn't show up. So
did not show up, and we're in a drought.
Yeah,
they show up in the wrong places. I was in Denver coming home from Oklahoma City, and maybe 3 inches paralyzed the entire airport. It was something to see.
Yeah. I'd like to remind our listeners that there is a website called victorhanson.com. And if you went there today, there's a ton of stuff to read. And for example, Victor mentioned at the beginning of the show about primaries. Well, he's got here's his most recent syndicated column, which is also you write this, Victor, for American Greatness, Let the People Decide. So you can read what Victor writes there. But there is a lot of material that he writes that is exclusive to the website. And it's called Ultra. And you can read it, but by subscription. I really would like to recommend, and I told you this, Victor, I wrote this three-part series. You wrote, again, exclusive for the website, A Drive into Oblivion is one of the most beautiful and poignant pieces of writing I've seen in such a long time. But there's really, really a lot of ultra content there. So go there. walk around, let your fingers do the walking around the website, and consider subscribing. It's $5 to test it out, $50 for the year. So that's victorhansen.com. But also, I'd like to recommend, Victor, since I'm hawking for you right now, you'll find a lot of book links there. And Christmas is coming up, and if there's someone in your life, just for example, who loves military history, I really want to recommend the Second World Wars of the many books Victor has written. That's just one. Check out the books at victorhansen.com. Quickly, for me, Jack Fowler, I write Civil Thoughts, a free weekly email newsletter for the Center for Civil Society at American Philanthropic. And you can sign up for it at civilthoughts.com. Again, it's free. I give a dozen plus recommended readings of worthwhile, important articles that I've come across the week before. Here are the links. Here's an excerpt. I think you'll like it. Sign up, civilthoughts.com. Victor, this week, I believe it was on Thursday, after there was some, it was confirmed that Republicans were going to control the House of Representatives. And as we speak right now, I think they have 219 votes. As you mentioned, there are three, I think there are three remaining California races as yet undecided. It may get up to, you know, 220, 221. Anyway, Republicans are controlling the House of Representatives. And James Comer and Jim Jordan had a press conference where they discuss that there will be an investigation of Hunter Biden, and I believe more fully the Biden family, how involved, what exactly was Hunter Biden doing, who was involved with him, was the president of the United States involved in this. So, Victor, not unexpected. I'm wondering if you had any thoughts, if you could well, you can say whatever you want about that, of course. But I'd be interested if you were advising this committee on how to proceed in a public way, because so many times we've experienced these things in the past. Republicans have a special committee, they investigate, and okay, there's an adversarial media. It seems to go nowhere. This has the same potential of being suppressed by social media, et cetera. But what is there any advice you would have for the committee on how to proceed? And if not, what are your general thoughts about this special committee?
Well, you're going to make a good point, because we're going to have two investigations going on. And one is going to be an investigation by Merrick Garland's special counsel. And he's going to have the entire investigatory expertise of the whole federal DOJ. And those investigations have unlimited budgets. They have professional lawyers. And then we're going to have an investigation by a House committee. And they're going to be politicians and less adept lawyers that are staffers. And my experience is that whether it's the Benghazi hearing, there's a lot of hype, a lot of expectations, there's a lot of grilling, but lying to a House committee, as we saw with James Comey, we saw with John Brennan with the Senate committee, we saw with James Clapper, I think we saw with Mueller, has very little consequence.
Right.
And we're going to see if they can even subpoena, because we know that if you don't go to a Democratic committee, I should say Democratic majority committee, you'll go to jail, as in the case of Steve Bannon. If you say, screw you, the Republican committee, like Eric Holder did, nothing happens.
You get a gig. You get speaking fees.
I would be very surprised if a lot of witnesses say, screw you, I'm not going to go. And then they say, oh, you're going to send a criminal referral? Oh, send it to Merrick Garland. And so that's one problem. Then you've got a lot of grandstanding politicians that hype what they're going to say, and they get loud and they have all these histrionics, but they don't act like prosecuting attorney, and they're not as experienced. Some of them have been, but they've lost their touch. So I don't expect a lot, except what they need to do is concentrate not on might have, could have, should have, but what actually happened, in the sense of what data they have. And that's where Bobulinski comes in. He actually has emails. He turned them over to the FBI that show that the Biden family monetized Joe Biden's vice presidential position and got a lot of money. There's data, apparently, about how much money they had. And all they have to do is ask, was this money reported to the IRS? And what was the money given to for? And that's very narrow, is what I'm trying to say. Don't go branch out into all of these crazy other things. Just ask yourself, how much money came into the Biden syndicate? Who distributed it? And did they pay federal income tax money? And so, because this is going to be also, besides the special counsel against Trump, there's also an ongoing tax, they're just federal attorneys looking at his tax records. So we'll see, but I don't have a lot of expectation because the House or Senate investigatory committees never turn out to be as powerful or have the resources or the expertise of these special counsels or the regular DOJ investigation.
Despite the suppression of the Hunter Biden story for the last 2+ years, I kind of find it difficult to believe that any American that follows the news really hasn't heard of it by now, one way or another. I would be surprised. Hunter Biden laptop? I never heard of that. I doubt that would be the case. So I kind of think there's, as can happen in politics, I've been there, done that. Didn't we already deal with that? Or it's been around a long time. Nothing's come of it. But, and maybe there's something I really don't care. Personally, I don't care about Hunter Biden. I care about the big guy getting his, not only getting his 10%, but as Tony Babaluski, when he was on Tucker Carlson several weeks ago, I mean, there was a real interest, the belief that this family was going to cash in. I don't even think millions. I think they thought they were going to cash in for billions.
Well, put it
China. I mean, he was vice president.
I know. When you look at the number of homes, they had that big, beautiful state they have by the ocean, and they have, what, 3 homes, 4 homes? And the lifestyle, ask yourself, can you afford the maintenance or the acquisition of these things?
Right.
Either as a senator or as a vice president or in just a mere 4 years as a citizen, which is during the Trump years is when he really cashed in. He cashed in as vice president, but he had to be a little careful about Hunter's activity directly enriching him. But my God, I don't think he was, what I'm trying to say, he had a lifestyle that was not commensurate with a federal salary before he became a citizen. But in that 4 year period, that's when wink and nod, I'm going to be president someday, therefore monetize me even more. But I don't think he could have made that much money in 4 years as a private citizen to justify all the things he was enjoying. And so,
yeah,
all they have to do, it's not easy, but all they have to do is find deposits.
Right.
The money is such a magnitude, it couldn't have come in cash. But where's the money? And did he pay income tax? That's all he has to do. And then he needs to look at how much money he gave back to Hunter, because I think it's the federal law now is, what, $17,000?
Right. Everything over that is 50% tax.
Yep, tax.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But the thing about this whole discussion that we're having, there's a simple principle that the Democratic Party and the progressive left and the neo-socialists have all saturated the media, social media, NPR, PBS, network news, celebrities, academia, the whole culture milieu with the idea that we are for equity. We are a quality of result party. We are empathetic. And therefore, from time to time, we go a little bit overboard. We bend the rules a little bit because we're so generous. And you can really see that when we get into the discussion of Bankman-Fried. He's on record with saying, these wokesters really got fooled when I did that. And basically he said, I mouthed all this diversity.
ESG, right.
Yeah. And I was a bandit. And so that's what this whole thing's about. And for a Republican to do the same thing, they are blasted because they're hyper individuals. All they care about is capitalists getting money for themselves. They get no margin of error because they're greedy bastards. But us, sometimes we're sloppy, sometimes we're distracted, sometimes you can even hear this argument from Bankman-Fried's mother, the Stanford Law School professor, that was with this pack that was channeling dark money from Silicon Valley stealthily to Kennedy. Oh, I resigned. It was kind of confusing, and that's how they operate.
They get it. We're going to just to let our listeners know, we record two episodes when we do record. So we're going to talk about the man. My wife says Bankman-Fried. She says Bankman-Fried. It sounds like one of these morality names from a Victoria novel. We'll talk about that on the next podcast we record. We've got a couple other political things to talk about on this one, Victor, and we'll wrap up the show with these two topics. One is Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer are stepping down from the elite House leadership. And then the other item is Lee Zeldin, the came close Republican candidate for governor in New York, is considering taking on the chairmanship of the Republican Party. And we'll get your thoughts on Victor's thoughts on these matters right after this important message.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Hey, I just want to give a hat tip to the Victor Davis Hanson Fan Club on Facebook. If you're on Facebook, you should check it out. You should also check out Victor's own page and Victor VDH's Morning Cup. You should sign up for that. And if you are on Twitter, his handle is at VD Hanson. So, Victor, Nancy Pelosi has announced she is will not be the Democrat leader. And Steny Hoyer, who has been the number two for ages, I think he's been in the leadership, whether or not Pelosi's been in it or not, I think. Steny Hoyer, he is standing down, too, as a leader. It's time for a new leadership. I don't know why they didn't say this before the elections. And Hakeem Jeffries, who is a congressman from New York City, Brooklyn and Queens, he looks to be the presumptive Democrat leader. Victor, any thoughts on the end of the Pelosi Hoyer era? E-R-R-O-R or E-R-A?
Yeah, I was really shocked about these people who, you know, they all almost act as if she was Henry Clay or somebody. They just went on and on and on about how wonderful she is. Just look at what she did the last few years. She gave all these lectures about mask. And then she sneaks out to her hairdresser and breaks the quarantine. She talks about sacrifice. Then she issues a video about her $25,000 twin subarctic refrigerators and her, $11 a pint ice cream that's delivered to her door. She says that we shouldn't bus migrants northward because they're necessary to pick crops. And you add her husband in this mysterious car wreck, and then all of this news about the break-in of the Pelosi house. It has one common denominator. I don't have any idea what happened, but I do know that every single news cycle has a new iteration. He didn't answer the door. He did answer the door. He did go with the police. He didn't go with the police. The police knew they were there. They didn't know who was there. They called the 911. Well, the police who arrived didn't know it was a Pelosi resident, but they did know it and all of that stuff. And then, you know, she'll be known also as the only Speaker of the House who tore up the State of the Union on national TV. And, you know, January 6th was an excitable moment, but she's on tape saying she wants to punch the President of the United States in the face. And she wishes he would come right there. And then her daughter, remember, using her maiden name, Pelosi, rather than her married name, so that everybody know the Pelosi feeling right after Rand Paul was seriously battered with a collapsed lung, broken ribs, soon to be pneumonia. And she gloats and says, I think the neighbor's right. And so she's part of this zip code, this Dianne Feinstein billionaire, whose late husband had heavy investments in China, who had a Chinese spy as her chauffeur for 20 years when she was head of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And he just shrugged. She's Nancy Pelosi that lives nearby in another similar mansion. She's Gavin Newsom, the creation of the Getty family with all of his inside money. She's Barbara Boxer, senator for nearly 20 years in Woodsdale, and I guess from Rancho Mirage or somewhere down there. She's a registered Chinese agent. And so she's the face of all of these people. Elizabeth Holmes, Samuel Bankman-Fried, all of these people. They all come out of the nexus between San Jose and San Francisco. They're all very left-wing. They all virtue signal. They all performance art. They're wokeism. And,
right.
And they use their knowledge of government and public service to make a lot of money. And
yeah.
They are hyper-capitalists, and they like nice things. They like nice things. They like sub-Arctic refrigerators and designer ice cream, and they want you to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
They got big Tahoe estates, and they want you to know about it. And they like to go down to, in the case of this young man, to the Bahamas and have polyamorous relationships, and they want you to know about it. So there's something toxic about that culture that we really haven't explored, that kind of a trifecta
right.
Between UC Berkeley, Stanford University, Silicon Valley, and we can talk about that when we get to banking too, but it's not.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
As far as the other, you know, the people who are taking George Will, you remember, didn't he write an article? What a great young man, and this is going to be the substitution of the Republican Party when we have Hakeem Jeffries, who's going to lead that he was a moderate, and he's going to lead the Democratic Party to great.
Gosh. Can I tell you something about he may have Hakeem? This is funny. Remember the Claude Pepper, when Claude Pepper ran for Senate, and his opponent was, I think, Smathers. Actually, yeah, and Smathers said, my opponent, his sister is a thespian and things like that, you know, using three syllable words to confuse the electorate. And Jeffries did something in a weird way similar when he first was running for office in New York. He said, oh, you know, I don't want to make any deal of the fact that I'm a Christian who goes to Baptist church and my opponent is of course, a practicing Muslim. And he did two or three things like that. That kind of and his opponent, this guy was a Democrat dirtbag too. This was a Democrat primary for state house or a city council seat. But he's you know, there's no freaking halo around his head. That said, he may be a presentable candidate.
I just remember him from the column that Will wrote, and then I remember when Tara Reid came forward, and he like Kamala Harris, was trying to, I think he was for Kamala Harris at that time or whatever, during that 2020 primary.
But yeah.
He mentioned that and said that she should to rephrase that. What's the senator from Hawaii? Women must be believed. And right. She basically said that about Tara Reade, that this is serious. She's right. Gotta be believed. And then, of course, when Biden got the nomination, she was to be dismissed as a liar. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say of it.
Alan, we'll see. We'll see soon enough. So, hey, the other story I mentioned, Victor, and I will torture our listeners for just a half a minute here. So Lee Zeldin, he came pretty close to knocking off Kathy Hochul, but he had a broader success in New York. He was part of that success. New York flipped several House seats. So he sent out people are reaching out to him, very impressed by what he did or came close to doing. And he wrote the other day to Republican National Committee members, "I'm very seriously considering your requests, grateful for your messages." And this is what he wrote: the Republican Party should compete in all 50 states, ensure we are driving our turnout with our base. We also need to go to all communities, no matter how blue they are, show up often, build relationships, and advance our proposals on education, upward economic mobility, housing, mental health, public safety, and more. This means making sure people know what we stand for and not just what we are against. The effectiveness and success of this vision is reflected in the red wave that decimated Democrats in New York this cycle, flipping 4 congressional seats from blue to red, the most in the entire country, and taking out the chair of the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee, while also holding several key targeted House seats in the state. The key was to run as one team, top down and bottom up. We organized, collaborated, stayed on message, remained disciplined, and put in max effort every single day, etc. So I think there's I think he's accurately describing a broad campaign strategy in New York that showed success. You wonder, if the Michigan Republican Party could have had, half of that. So he's a very appealing figure right now for the party. And Rona McDaniel, who is the current chairman of the party. So she's going to run. Does it matter? Do we really care who's the chairman of the Republican Party National Committee? Most people don't know or follow it. I think it's interesting and worthwhile. And he may be somebody who is consequential in that position.
Well, he's run for something. He's run for something. He's conducted a campaign. He's run as as a red candidate in a blue state. He did very well. The margin of his defeat, or essentially the number of people who moved down to Florida in the last 2 years. So he did it very, and he probably helped keep the House by those New York congressional seats that flipped. So yeah, I think he deserves it. But more importantly, if you lose in 2000, or you're sorely disappointed in 2022, and you lose in 2020 the presidency, and you lose 40 plus House seats in 2018. At some point, you need new leadership. It just, the captain of the ship goes down with it if it's sinking. And so they need to get a new RNC. I like her, Lauren McGowan, but it hasn't worked that well on the national level, is what I'm trying to say. And they need a new person who's an ideal person. And I would extend that philosophy to Mitch McConnell, although he knows the whole maze and labyrinth of the Senate. Had he had a different attitude, and his attitude had been, "I have a lot, hundreds of millions of dollars, and I'm going to be Senate Majority Leader, and we're going to be Senate Majority Party, rather than we may or may not get the House, but damn it, I'm going to remain the Senate Minority Leader." He had a different attitude. He would have showered Blake Masters and other people with more money, and that might have, one seat might have made the difference. Had he given Oz more money earlier and more encouragement, and had he given Blake Masters money, I think they could have won. And so I don't think he should have been leader. Anybody who is in charge when they lose, and they lose in a manner that could have been avoided, I don't think deserves to be reappointed. No, I was just thinking that just came to my mind when you mentioned Hakeem Jeffries. Get off topic just a second. That guy was the nephew of Lionel. I think his name was Lionel Jeffries or Leonard Jeffries. And he was a, I got to know him, Leonard Jeffries. I remember him because I spoke at Wellesley as a classicist, and he was the Afrocentric person that talked about ice people and sun people.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah,
oh,
I remember him.
Yeah.
And he had that big lawsuit that they removed him because he was so anti-Semitic. He hated Jews so much he could not restrain himself. And he went after Mary, along with other Afrocentrists, he went after Mary Lefkowitz, the distinguished classicist from Wellesley College, who wrote a book called Not Out of Africa, kind of debunking the whole idea that Greece was a product of a black African Egyptian origin, which was...
Socrates was black, Plato was black, or whatever,
It was kind of ridiculous. They took pictures, I mean, they looked at statuary from the Roman period of Socrates in very racist fashion. They said, look, he has African-American features, but this guy's uncle was the leader of that, and he was a complete nut, and he was a racist and an anti-Semite, and he was removed as chairman and sued. They gave him a ton of money to get back, and it was, and so that's how I know Hakeem.
Okay.
George Will's voice of moderation.
I don't. Victor, you mentioned a couple of episodes. There's certain people you read and you take the opposite view. People who are allegedly, on our side of the ledger. And when it comes to George Will, who I must admit, I was the publisher of National Review. He had worked at National Review once at a time long before I was there. But when he started attacking Whitaker Chambers, and when Billy Graham died, attacking him and his low grade, what he called a low grade atheism, which he's an atheist, but has seemed to become more pronounced and informative of his opinions, I really find him quite troubling, and someone I really don't give a rat's patoot what he has to say about anything anymore. But who cares what I have to say about anything? Victor,
I met George Will. I served on the Bradley board with him. I like him personally.
Yes.
I could not believe that he extended his antipathy for Donald Trump in 2018 to the entire Republican Party, and called for the Democrats to get a majority, which they did.
Yes.
And with the majority that they have now in the Senate, and that majority they picked up in 2018, that allowed for a lot of hardcore left-wing judges. It allowed to ensure the open border. It allowed that we would not be energy independent. It green-lighted another $4 trillion.
Right.
And it really negated everything that he had told us for 40 years he was for.
Exactly.
And that was all, he's not alone. I'm not trying to single him out. But my point is that a lot of these never-Trumpers in this, they were so consumed and fixated on hated Donald Trump, they renounced their entire work, all of their lifelong advocacy, which immediately raises the question, was it ever, what were they? If one person can set you off in a personal spite, and then you just disown everything you've told people, you've raised money, you've sold books, you spoke, all of that, is then you say in retrospect, forget all of that, just vote for the left now.
Yeah.
It really, and that's a good question that everybody should ponder, because it's going to come up again in this next round, because we have been reading in the Dispatch from our former colleagues, and we've been reading in the Bulwark a little bit more intensely. I don't read them, but that's what I hear third hand. And we know that the David Crumbs, the Bill Kristol, the Charles Sykes, all of those people, the Max Boots, all the people we knew on the conservative side have told us that Donald Trump was a prince of darkness, and he had polluted the entire Republican Party. And because they were of such high moral stature, they could not condone or associate with or give their imprimatur to anybody associated with that character.
Right.
Right. Now, there's a possibility, 50-50, that the Republican Party may or may not vote for Donald Trump in the primaries. And if they should not, and they vote for Ron DeSantis, who, according to the standards of these Never Trumpers, would fit perfectly because he is a veteran. He is an Ivy League graduate.
Right.
He's an athlete. He's a family man. He's been a congressman. He's been a governor. He has all the requisites which traditional Republicans, the cursus honorum, that's what you're supposed to be. Now, what are they going to do? What are they going to do if they nominate Ron DeSantis? Are they going to say, well, he still talks to Trump, or he still embodies the MAGA agenda? And that would be, he wants a closed border, or he wants to reindustrialize the Midwest. He cares. They're going to be in a really...
Victor, I think, though, and we've talked about this before, I think it's more so, maybe, or in part, the toothless Walmart shoppers like him. And that's at the nub of this disdain that many have.
So the absence of Trump will not be... There won't be a Never Trump movement.
Yeah.
Because Trump won't be there to be never against. It'll just be retitled to Never Any of the Deplorable Movement. Is that
Never
Deplorable.
And there's somebody deserves to be, some historian should go back and look at one of the first real conservative races in America was in 1965 when Bill Buckley ran for mayor of New York. OK, it was a stunt, right? But it was trying to make a point, and did surprisingly well. I mean, he had 13-14% of the vote. But surprising for what New York City was. Do you know where that vote came from, Victor? That 13% or 14%. It came from Woodlawn in the Bronx it came from the outer boroughs. It came from the bus drivers and the cops and et cetera, who found some appeal in this conservative guy. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that has been... That has been at the core of conservative voters for years. And I just how the elite conservatives disdain these people is just beyond me. It really what, you know, who didn't disdain them was Bill Buckley. He didn't. But the people who, you know, like to claim his legacy have no problem doing that. That's my rant. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you saw what was building in 2015, Jeb exclamation point, and he had outraised everybody, and he had his hands on the reins of all of the donor class in the Republican Party, and he was going to be the anointed candidate, and then you saw who was behind Trump. That was the first time. I mean, it had a little bit of Ross Perotism or Buchananism in it.
Right. Yeah.
That's the first time that people who were conservative really opposed the hierarchy of the McCain, Romney, Bush control. And that was what was
repeated. Right.
But there were a lot of things that may have been unappealing about Donald Trump, but one thing that was appealing is he was not a snob. And he
right.
was appealing to people who were conservative and saying to them, you're not stupid. That border really should have been closed. And you're not crazy. China is a very dangerous place and they have to trade free. And you're right. You've got highways. You've got power plants. You've got good workers in southern Ohio, Illinois, and Michigan and Indiana. And we're going to rebuild this industrial center. And we're not going to get in an optional war overseas. We're going to do Jacksonian with a deterrent philosophy. That was appealing because that's not what those other people wanted. All they wanted to do was talk about reducing the capital. I'm for reducing the capital gains. I don't think I've ever had any capital gains very much, but it makes sense to reduce it. But that's what they fixated on. That and privatizing Social Security. That's not an appealing message for most
people. No, especially and for people who, whether you're, a cop on the beat or even a conservative, let's say, financial trader. I mean, I think this cut across a lot of classes. You come home at night, you turn on the TV. This is, you know, pre-Trump running. Baltimore is on fire, and the commentators are saying, and it's your fault. You know, you're what the you upper middle class white guy. It's your fault, or Michael Brown in Missouri. Somehow or other, this is my fault. Wait a minute. I go to church. I donate. I volunteer, and I'm a bad person. Enough of this already. I think that
We saw Mitt Romney, remember, bowing with the BLM march.
Oh my gosh!
And I thought, wait a minute.
My gosh.
I thought to myself, I live in Selma, California. I came from middle class families. I know middle class people. I don't have any. You're the one. You're Bain Capital. You took the picture with all the money around your neck. You've got all the houses. So don't act as if you represent a guilt-ridden white population. You represent the people. You're cutting a private deal with BLM, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
If they were honest and truthful, they're anger would be directed at people like you with so-called white privilege. Your father was highly connected in business, etc. But don't take on the mantle that you are sanctimoniously on the side of equity and diversity, inclusion, and all the other white middle-class people don't. They can't match your empathy or sophistication. That's what people got angry about, that virtue signaling. Virtue signaling from the white privileged class, as to say to the BLM movement or the woke movement, hey, exempt, pass over my house, not theirs. Those are the guys that, you know, have broken teeth and they smell and they're middle class and they buy Winnebagoes on time. Go after them. But I'm privileged. And that's what everybody got angry about, the sanctimonious.
Right. And the ratting out. Right. Yeah. That's how 1984 ends. Not me. Hey, she did it. Right. Get them. Hey, Victor, we're overtime on this episode. So, and I apologize for that. And I'm going to read, though, something that's going to make me want to apologize even more. You know, we end the podcast with expressing our appreciation, which is very genuine. For those who listen, thank you very much. No matter what platform you're on, of course, if you're on Apple or iTunes, you can rate the show from 1-0 to 5 stars. Victor, 99.9% of the ratings are 5-star ratings, and many people leave comments. And some people who leave critical comments also leave 5 stars. And I have to read one, Victor. This was kind of egotistical, but too bad. This is from Chips O'Toole 1, and he writes, Jack talks too much, not saying anything. And here's what he wrote. Just an observation. I'm completely diehard on BDH. I'll listen to every word he says forever, and then I'll replay everything. However, 8 minutes of the beginning of this podcast was commercials, understandable, and Jack stuttering to get his thoughts out so that BDH could begin his podcast. Please, for God's sake, Jack, write a note introduction and stick with it, short, succinct, to the point, period. All thanks to the great BDH. And yes, Jack, too. This is from Chris.
It makes you feel any better. Every once in a while, I'm traveling and I'm on a plane or I'm at the airport and somebody comes up to me and says, are you the guy? And there's something about the person that I know is hostile. I have to confess that I'll say, no, I'm not.
Yeah,
and that person, this has happened 3 times in my life, that person then will reveal what he or she thought of me to me.
To you? And
yes, I was on a plane from San Jose down to Los Angeles once, and a woman said, are you the person that I see's picture in San Jose next to a column? And I said, you know, that's very interesting. People have said that about me. I don't know who this guy is. Who is he? Well, he's an asshole, and he thinks he knows everything, and he writes these things with polysyllabic words. He didn't say big words.
Right.
I am sick of. I don't like that guy, and I saw him once on some stupid podcast or TV. He's obnoxious, and he looks just like you. I said, I know it. That's happened to me, but I don't know who he is. It's happened 3 or 4 times.
Wow.
And then she got very friendly and said, don't you hate all these right wing? And she was a person of color, white people. And I said, I don't know. But you really get to hear what people think about you.
Yeah. Wow.
In those cases. Yeah. And I like to read. I have my angry reader that.
Bill, yeah. You should collect them as a book. You really should.
I have a lot that are building up. I have and then I have the not so angry readers, the direct email that comes to me. I get 1 or 2 voicemail, you know, F-U. Then I get the occasional. That Sunny, what's that woman's name on The View? Sunny, what's her name?
Oh my gosh, the one who said the cockroaches
Now she said that white Republicans were cockroaches.
Right.
She's a racist. And now she's after Tucker because Tucker exposed how limited she was. And she says people, because she was telling everybody to outlaw guns, you know, we've got to get rid of basically the Second Amendment. And then he said, yeah. And he just used that as an object of idiocy. And he said, yes, people who live in big mansions with security guards.
Right.
Of course, she played the victim and said Tucker unleashed a lot of hatred toward her. And now she has security. And then they found out, of course, that she moved into this historic 10 bedroom, 10 bathroom mansion.
Oh, my gosh.
The Lehman, and had been bragging about it and had showed her on TV or on film her entire layout and bragged. And she had a security apparatus well before this, but it was so funny because now she was saying that she was getting threats. But all I can tell you, my security detail here is $5, $4.
right. And
sympathetic Fresno County sheriffs that come by once in a while or Highway Patrol will talk just as they drive by if I happen to be around.
Yeah.
And 8 or 9 ancient firearms. And I get people that come by a lot. Sometimes I had a guy in the vineyard not too long ago from an orchard nearby, and he kept texting me. I don't know how he got my number, but I'm not leaving until you come out. I'm not leaving until you come out.
I mean, he was not a neighbor. He was a transgressor, a trespasser.
When somebody rings the doorbell, they say, I was driving down the 99. I saw the name Selma. And I remember, so you were from Selma. I looked on the internet and found your address. That was scary.
Right.
And my road that I'm on is an exit on the 99. So they just came here and then they rang the doorbell on the wall and they said, you know, and it's happened maybe 30 times, but nine out of 10 times the people are very polite.
Yeah.
And they either want to sign a book or they want to talk or they... or sometimes they're very nice people, but every once in a while there is someone who is combative.
Yeah.
That gets strange. And I have part, there's another person that's kind of stalked us. So my point is, I get really, don't feel bad about that, number one, because I hear it all the time and I don't think it amounts to anything. And
right.
I get very tired of people who. One of our former colleagues at National Review used to always tell us about all the hate mail we got and how many people were. And you're the only person that happens to. None of us mention it, but it happens to everybody. I had a guy who wrote me all the time and said, if you're in Washington, D.C. and I see you, I'm going to shoot you and I'm going to kill you. He did that all the time. I wrote that. He was an angry reader. I wrote him back. And finally, one of the readers who was a federal prosecutor posted and said, I just want to inform you what you've done is a felony, and basically said, we know who you are. So if you were to go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
Very nice of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
When people come up to you and you don't know who they are and it's usually a pleasant experience. They'll come up and say, hi, how are you? Let me tell you what I do. I don't mind it. I like it. But every once in a while, you can see what the type of person is coming up to you, and they want to have a confrontation.
Right.
And a lot of them are quote-unquote Karens, you know what I mean? Ex-hippie women, about 70 now, I'm stereotyping. When I see one of those people and say, I had one three weeks ago at the Houston airport, and a woman came up to me. I was waiting at the baggage claim, and a woman came up to me, not to get a bag, but to get a card. I mean, find a car to go.
Did she know who you were?
I don't know if she knew my name. She thought she could see me on Fox TV or something.
Okay.
She came up to me and she just said, I just want to know that everything you think and believe, I think the opposite. And I just want you to know that every stupid thing that you say and every stupid idiot thing you are, I have a smart answer to.
Oh my gosh.
And I said, you know what? We should trade places. You should be a columnist. It's a free country. All you have to do is go on TV and write a column and tell us what your views are. That's what the system is about. She says, oh, I don't think so. And so, yeah, it happens a lot, but not a lot, but enough to be not unusual.
Right. Well, for people, you live in a pretty desolate area. I mean, Selma is not a high density, and for that many people to be like stopping by,
it's like, I know, but wow. It's never a San Joaquin Valley person.
Yeah, it's
somebody driving on the 99 freeway.
Yeah,
which is 2 miles from my house, and the main north south freeway in the center of the state, who just sees Mountain View or they see Selma.
Yeah.
And they make a detour. And,
well, Victor,
and it's very rare. It happens once every 3 or 4 months, but after 10 years, it adds up.
Yeah. Well, that may be rare for you, but I think it's non-existent for most people. But you have such a loving fan base that people come from afar.
I have some of the nicest people that post letters or emails.
Yeah,
and they're very, and I look at the I read all the comments. They're very nice people, and they're very. What I'm impressed by is there are many of them are much better educated than I am. They say, you know, I really like your podcast, but I think you could have said this, or I like your column, but you left out that. And you know, 9 out of 10 times they've got really good points. And
I learned from them. Well, Victor, you said thank you. I said thank you. We'll say it again. Thanks to our listeners. And we will be back soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.